These Infinity Stones.
Wait.
Look, I'm out of the weapons business.
What are we watching?
Case, but how do we put a super armor?
We haven't seen this before.
This is new.
Around the galaxy.
What is
you
this?
You can't tell me. There's not what? Another big
bad. What are they hiding from us? This was a erased episode.
I don't know what's going on, but I don't remember this. This is not something that
they've
I've
changed
before.
Something. There's a glitch. We gotta get out of here.
It's a glitch of the Matrix. I see the black cat.
Welcome back to New Rock Stars, Marvel Studios' What If Episode 9, the season finale. What if the Watcher broke his oath, breaks reality in all kinds of ways, including our reality, with a hint of a missing 10th episode from this season? What were Iron Man and Gamora and Eitri doing on Nidavellir? What have they hidden from us? What the if? This is Inside Marvel. It's our after show for Marvel's What If on Disney Plus. I'm Eric Voss. My breakdown of all the Easter eggs you missed from the season finale is coming to the channel tomorrow. But right now, to discuss this episode with me, MT, you have been chosen.
Thank you, my brother Eric. Dude, this episode was crazy. That Killmonger twist, I don't understand what the Watcher was expecting out of Killmonger. You must know that Killmonger is not a good person. Why did you pick him for this team? I don't know.
It seems like that was part of his plan,
yeah,
right?
He had it
all planned out. Man, 12 by 12 to the 12 power steps ahead of everyone. Insane that this guy had this level of thinking.
If you have a head that big, Eric, I would expect that level of thinking. Like, come on, man.
Yes, that's true. Good point.
Big head gang.
I can't do that. I don't think I'm in the big head gang. It's just you and Tommy.
It's me, Tommy, and Watu.
I'm the watcher to the big head gang. It's like, hi.
Watching
can
from
I
afar.
Hang out with you guys. Hello. Waving through a window. Not interested. This finale picks up with Captain Carter in the present era, really following in the footsteps of Steve Rogers from the opening sequence of Captain America the Winter Soldier against Batroc. Mm. Man, George St. Pierre getting those checks from Disney Plus.
I love how he's just like, I'm so fast. I'm too fast.
Too fast. Ha-ha. I'm over here. Captain Carter gets recruited by the Watcher. He picks his top six Pokemon battle lineup that includes Star-Lord T'Challa, Gamora from some episode, Killmonger, Party Thor, and Strange Supreme. And together they are the Guardians of the, insert frickin' here, multiverse.
Only
I
didn't
love this
say
moment.
Frickin'.
I'm a sucker for any putting the gang together montage.
Right,
I do.
I love a team. I love teams so much.
Love a good team. Now they meet in Peggy's pub, and I love this. There's something kind of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. about this, right?
Oh,
yeah. Just hanging out in the bar, just like creating that out of nothing. Perfect.
Right.
And they devise this battle strategy against Ultron Infinity. Meanwhile, Killmonger forebodingly tinkers with an Ultron Sentry head. Someone could have said like, hey, can we get that away from him? I don't know what he's doing with it, but I don't know that guy. And he's looking at it real weird.
It's like, you like this a little bit too much. This is, we're taking this away from you. Sorry.
So they wage war with Ultron Infinity and empty this battle rocks.
I really love this. I love it so much.
Strange uses magic to armor up everyone. I'm like, oh, this is fun. I'm having fun. he creates duplicate Mjolnirs and they all like, and one just kind of dinked, like the late one.
Oh my God. Like literally like Battle on Titan vibes with this.
Yeah.
Like hardcore.
Yeah. It was great, but it felt like another dimension to it because you can use animation to do all kinds of crazy stuff. Not like with VFX, pretty much everything is animated in a sense, but they just kind of went crazy with it. I enjoyed it. He rains zombies, including zombie Wanda Maximoff on Ultron.
Oh my God. Really I screamed when I saw her. I screamed.
Yeah. I like it was just like a Sakaar trash dump. version of that. Just all pouring out World War Z mess.
Right, straight out of the devil's anus, right onto planet.
Like, where were they before that? Had he gathered them all, like, in a big, like, I think of Walking Dead at one point, they just kind of gather all the walkers into just, like, a big pit of them. Mm-hmm. Just
that's
to be like,
exactly
well,
what happened.
Let's just keep pushing them in here and hope they don't get out. Now, during this, T'Challa, with his sticky fingers, snatches the Soul Stone, and they return to Ultron's original Earth in New York City, and they continue to fight, and they're able to pin him long enough for Gamora to use the Infinity Crusher to pulverize the six stones. But then suddenly Infinity Stone logic matters on this show, so this doesn't work. we'll talk about it. And Black Widow plugs Ultron with that Zola AI arrow, and Zola neutralizes Ultron's AI. Now, why didn't the Watcher recruit Black Widow if she had this ace in the hole to begin with?
Yeah.
I don't know. This is part of his plan. Everything is part of his plan.
It had to happen.
Don't question it. It had to happen specifically that way. And then Killmonger, man, that asshole.
Huge asshole. He's always looking out for himself, 100%.
He uses that sentry head. I guess it still has some of Ultron's consciousness in it, so he can still have access to the Infinity Stones, use the Reality Stone to assemble his new Killmonger Infinity suit. And he offers to right all the wrongs in the multiverse, but then Zola's AI awakens in the Synthezoid's tummy.
Finally getting that Zola, Zola android.
Classic Zola. Zola. Classic.
Classic. I'm so happy that we got that. It was so satisfying.
I know. That was wonderful. And then the two of them tug of war over the stones, but that is what the Watcher wanted. So he and Strange Supreme trap them in a pocket reality, and it leaves Strange to just kind of hang out and watch this snow globe for all of eternity.
Seriously. Kind of messed up. Kind of messed up, but okay.
I mean, at least give him like a sofa to sit on.
Seriously, you know? He's just standing there. It's like, all right, thanks. I'm just going to hold this forever.
Like a Disney Plus bundle, you know, so we can just have something else to kind of watch. Seriously. In the background.
Like, come on, yeah. Watcher. Rude.
So the Warriors return to their home realities, except Black Widow. She goes to that episode 3 Avengers List reality to help Captain America and Captain Carter defeat Loki on a helicarrier. Meanwhile, back in Captain Carter's reality from the beginning of the episode, Natasha reveals Batroc was after the Hydra Stomper armor from the first episode with someone inside. Probably Skinny Steve. We'll talk about what that is. But at the moment, honestly, most of my questions about this mystery lost episode about Gamora and Iron Man and Sakaar. You mean to tell us there's one universe where Tony Stark actually lives? Huh? Thank God. But what happened there? Why was this episode removed? That will be our main question for this episode. But you are running out of time to grab a What If Latest Obsession shirt on NewRockStarsMerch.com. They are close to running out of stock, and when they're gone, they will be locked in the blue dungeon forever.
Forever.
There's also a shirt inspired by Let There Be Carnage, and a few of the Shang-Chi Latest Obsession shirts remaining. So if you buy one of the Latest Obsession shirts, you will get the option to leave a custom shout-out that will run during the bottom of Inside Marvel episodes. William asks, will the TVA get flooded with Nexus events during the Ultron-Uatu fight as they break through each universe? Good question. Where was the TVA in all this?
Seriously.
I don't know.
Just, I hope that they were just watching. It's like, hey, this is like, we've never seen this before. Let's just see how this plays out.
I mean, maybe the Watcher, the fact that he was able to patch it all up, the TVA's like, no, we got a guy on the inside. He's going to make sure it's all okay by the end of it. This was all part of the sacred timeline that the Watcher was able to. Well, Leah asks, since Christine Palmer's death is an absolute point, does that mean she will die in Multiverse of Madness? Well, it depends on if you see absolute points as being absolute to their own timelines or to all timelines. I've made the argument that Tony Stark's death is absolute in all timelines. Whereas other absolute points could just be absolute to their own timelines. So I could see Christine Palmer surviving in Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah, I think that that absolute point was just for Strange Supreme's universe and not a constant.
And then Ryan asks, what if Eric was Thanos? Well, I wouldn't be able to strike the booty poses that
I doubt that, Eric. I think you could do it. You could do
I
it.
I tried. I pulled things,
bro,
and I realized 100 the blinds
squats
were open.
A day, and you'll be there by February.
I'm not going to do that. Pass. Pass.
Big pass. I wouldn't do that shit either.
Big pass. Well, what's our big question coming out of this episode, MT?
Well, Eric, what if there was a missing 10th episode of this season of What If?
Okay, yeah, so before this season began, the episode number at the last minute was adjusted from 10 episodes to 9 episodes. They said one episode was being moved to the second season. Producers said COVID made it so that one episode wouldn't be ready in time. I don't believe that, because you can socially distant produce animation with minimal delays. There is an adjustment that has to be made, but like it seems like they were working on all these episodes throughout 2019 before COVID anyway. Mm. Like, we saw a teaser for what these episodes were going to be. They totally could have gotten this done, especially since the first episode of the show came out on August 11th. You know, you have time until October 6th. I think there might have been something that ended up overlapping with something that will come out in the movies, and they didn't want to.
Probably.
That's my guess. Or they're like, no, we want Tony Stark to die in every episode.
I think those are two very good points, especially the Tony Stark one, because the Tony Stark dying in pretty much every one of his appearances is too much of a coincidence to be ignored. So, like, the fact that they probably were just like, hey, Tony Stark survives in this universe. That doesn't really jive with the theme of this show. So let's just push this on over to season two.
Well, let's talk about what we think this episode was. It now appears that episode was going to be titled, What If Gamora Killed Thanos?
Oh,
now, as the Watcher goes to recruit the heroes of the past episodes to his team, he travels to Nidavellir, where Eitri is melting the Infinity Gauntlet in his forge, and he's joined by Gamora, who is carrying Thanos' double-bladed sword that we saw in Endgame, and Tony Stark, who's wearing, it looks like, Hulkbuster armor decorated with Sakaar art, and the Watcher greets her as Gamora, survivor of Sakaar and destroyer of Thanos. Now, we were all checking our notes during this moment, momentarily thinking that Doctor Strange might have Mandela affected us, but no. In fact, we never saw this episode, and the question is now is when and how did Gamora defeat Thanos? Why is Iron Man with her? So Thanos had the Infinity Gauntlet, which means this was relatively recent, like right as he began his Stone Quest, sometime between 2015 and 2017. But weirdly, in the shot, Eitri still has his hands. Now, in the films, when Thanos forced Eitri to forge the gauntlet, he cut off his hands. He cast the stumps in Uru so he could never make anything else.
Right.
So this must be some alternate series events altogether, or Eitri lied about what Thanos did to him, and he tripped in the forgery, and he fell into some hot pokers, and he's like, ah! And then he dips his hands in Uru. He's like, that's not water. And he's like, well, blame Thanos.
I'd like to think it was a Flerken that just scratched his hands up, like the whole Nick Fury twist.
Oh, nuts. I can't even snap. Now, based on all the evidence we saw here, I could see a few ways this missing episode went. So maybe, perhaps, Hulkbuster Tony, not Hulk, Hulkbuster Tony from Age of Ultron ended up on the Quinjet to Sakaar at the end of that movie. And then Hulkbuster Tony Stark becomes the Sakaar Gladiator champion. And
oh
then
my
it's
God,
him
I would love to see that episode, my dude. Oh my God, that'd be so much fun.
Like, we just got to fast track throughout all the events of Thor Ragnarok. And then, like, Tony Stark jumps from the Grandmaster's ship to the Bifrost Bridge, thinking he could do that Avengers move and his Hulkbuster armor could assemble around him. But it doesn't in time, and he just, like, flattens on the bridge. And maybe it would have been Tony who ended up in Thor's place floating through the space when he ran into the Guardians at the beginning of Infinity War. And it was him who joined forces with Gamora to stop Thanos from acquiring the rest of the stones. And then maybe Gamora's dagger to the neck move could have worked this time. And then just because they had the brilliant Tony Stark with them, they were able to get ahead of the game a bit sooner before Thanos was able to quickly gather everything.
Bro, that Hulkbuster Tony on Sakaar thing sounds extremely likely to be. That's a really good idea.
I think that's got
to
be a part of it, right? But there's also, like, weirdness. Like, why is Gamora? Just why is Gamora? We could stop the question. Why is Gamora? But why is she there? And I think maybe there was another wrinkle to this where Thanos could have sacrificed Nebula on Vormir instead of Gamora. Like, Thanos decided, you know what? I actually love this android daughter who I severely abused. I kind of love her a bit more. And then maybe he was able to use Nebula to get the Soul Stone. And then that left Gamora alive to join Tony and the others to fight Thanos. And this time, Peter Quill wouldn't have been grieving, so he wouldn't have punched Thanos out of that Mantis trance, and they could have wriggled the gauntlet off Thanos' hand from there. And then used the Infinity Crusher and then just melted the gauntlet as we see them do. Because it's just weird that Gamora is alive here. This would have happened earlier than the Sakaar events on Ragnarok, it sounds like. Because why would you visit Sakaar another time? And there's also, like, I don't know, maybe since episode 2 showed the Grandmaster's ships in the Collector's Vault, maybe there's some universe where these two elders traded, like, made some kind of trade, and the Reality Stone ended up on Sakaar, and that's why Thanos targeted Sakaar instead. There's just, like, a lot of different possibilities here, but I think there's some version of the events where Tony Stark, at the end of the events of Age of Ultron, right around the time when Thanos said, fine, I'll do it myself, somehow through some kind of accident, ended up on Sakaar and kind of followed the path of Hulk from those events where he was off-world.
Yeah.
You could also imagine Tony Stark was not on Earth during Civil War. That's an interesting thing to explore.
Right.
But then at the same time, Thanos sacrificed Nebula instead of Gamora. Mm. And I think those two things came together to produce what we saw at the end of this episode. And I assume some kind of combination of everything we've talked about, hopefully will be when we see this episode in season 2. But the weird thing is, now that this Gamora was already pulled for the Guardians of the Multiverse finale, Will this Gamora episode even matter to what happens in season two? Well, maybe, because Tony hinted at some other big bad lurking in the shadows, a monster under the bed. Almost sounded like they got Mick Wingert to kind of like do some last minute audio add in there, because like, why is Tony suddenly so freaked out over this? Like, you would think like, why can't he just like melt this thing and just be happy the way everyone else is just kind of like, aha, done with my thing. Like, the fact that he's suddenly so freaked out about this, it seemed like they sandwiched in a kind of fear for something beyond to justify them bringing this into season two. Who do you think that next bigger threat could be, MT?
Oh, that's a good
question. Like, how do you top Ultron Infinity?
No, that's a really good question, because, like, we still haven't seen the tentacle monsters. I thought that we would have the whole tentacle monster payoff in this finale, but we haven't seen them pop up since, you know, really since that first episode. I think that maybe that Mystery 10th episode was going to be like, oh, and then the tentacle monsters that we brought up. And, like, that's the mystery threat. But they were like, you know what, let's just save that for season two. Like, we don't need to tease it. Like, let's just let this end on, like, a good note, or, like, a pretty positive note with the whole Peggy and Steve thing, like, sort of mirroring the endgame ending. Maybe, like, they didn't know if they were going to do a season two. Like, because this was very much an experimental show. Sure. So maybe they were just like, hey, like, let's not tease something if we're not really guaranteed if we're going to have a season two.
I think, like, they very likely could come back on this series. In terms of, like, a big bad, like, to top Infinity Ultron, you kind of need to have something with more of a face, more of a personality. And some people are talking about Galactus or Kang. You know, I think Kang is obviously going to be a major threat to the whole MCU.
Oh, for sure.
Specifically to What If, though. They can really get specific with the toy box and play with really anyone. Like, Ultron Infinity is really, they just took an old villain. They're like, but what if he had this? So they can do that with any of their past villains, conceivably. I am wondering if, like, the bigger threat we're going to see is, like, the Council of Watchers, you know? Like, it seemed like the question of this episode is, what if the Watcher broke his oath? And we didn't really see any consequences for him for breaking his oath.
This is true.
He seemed to kind of just get away with exactly what his plan was. And then it's like, well, then why didn't he interfere earlier? Why didn't you interfere more and recruit more badasses from the multiverse? Is there really no one left? You can't tell me that there's no one left. There's got to be someone. Adam Warlock is somewhere.
I really wanted them to get into the past of the Watcher and, like, why he watches. This episode was literally called Why, like, What If the Watcher Broke His Oath? It's just kind of weird that we didn't see the motivations behind the Watcher in this episode. But, I mean, there's always season two, but
I got enough to, like, know why he would do what he's doing. Like, clearly he cares a lot about the balance of the multiverse, and he wants to keep it intact as much as he can. But just specifically that oath in the title of this episode, I think that's what we'll explore in season two. It's kind of like the way What We Do in the Shadows season one ended, and he realized that they're part of, like, this network, this bureaucracy of vampires, right? They had this trial. And that's kind of how they heighten it, is, like, you realize, oh, no, there's, like, a layer of bureaucracy to this. It's basically how Loki, it was, like, the Loki method, too, of, like, all these actions are taking place within a framework of people doing paperwork, you know? And to me, that's what I find most amusing, because it's the way you also ground things at the same time, because we all have to, like, wait in lines at DMVs and shit. We can relate with that more easily when you try to heighten things. So that's my hope. I would hope that we heighten by going more mundane. And by doing so, you can also just heighten the stakes of everything.
True.
And I guess Infinity Stones already don't matter, and they matter as much as you want them to, so who cares?
They're plot stones. but no, I think I would really love if in season two we got a conversation between the Watcher and Mordo, because Mordo is all about, like, the bill coming due and, like, you know, the price needing to be paid.
Yeah.
And the Watcher did violate his oath. And so I wonder if there was going to be a price there on a multiversal scale.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying like, to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
So I hope that we do see Chiwetel Ejiofor or a Chiwetel Ejiofor impressionist, Chiwetel Ejiofor, coming
yeah.
in to voice him.
Yeah, Chiwetel and Groot and Rocket, characters that it's like, I could have used a bit more of you guys somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. Like, it's just so weird that we just didn't get more Rocket. Like, specifically Rocket. Or in Groot, because, like, they're just so easy to,
They're so easy to plug in anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could have like, used a bit less of, like, non-Dave Bautista Drax and non-Brie Larson Captain Marvel in the show. And just, like, maybe one more episode of some of those guys. If you're going to use voice actors to replace them anyway, I feel like an I Am Groot impression, you don't need Vin Diesel to do that. Unless he has it in his contract. He's like, the only people who say I am Groot.
Like, I'm sure you have enough recordings at this point to just shove them in. Like, and
I am not Vin Diesel. Vin Diesel writes his contracts a quarter page at a time. He's very careful about how his stuff is used, and there's no way you're going to bring in his audio again without him getting a paycheck.
True. The Oscar performance.
Yeah, clearly. Well, before we continue, it's fun to watch What If episodes, but even Uatu doesn't like watching one thing, a growing credit card balance. Upstart can help lift that burden. Upstart is a fast and easy way to pay off your debt with a personal loan all online. Whether it's paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses, over 500,000 people have used Upstart to get a simple fixed monthly payment. Unlike other lenders, Upstart looks at more than just your credit score, like your income, your employment history. That means they can offer smarter rates with trusted partners. With a 5-minute online rate check, you can see your rate up front for loans between $1,000 to $50,000. You can receive funds as fast as one business day after accepting your loan. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/Marvel. That's upstart.com/Marvel. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know that we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/Marvel. Also, it's fall and Halloween is right around the corner. That means it's time to watch some scary movies. Well, there's no better place to do that than on Shudder, the Netflix of horror. You can stream great thrillers, horror, and suspense for $5.99 a month or $56.99 per year. Shudder has the largest, fastest-growing, curated selection of thrilling and dangerous entertainment. Stream on Apple and Android, Xbox, or however you watch your content. It's ad-free, and they have an excellent mix of classics and new stuff and some unexpected surprises, all presented in an uncluttered interface. I really love browsing through Shudder. It's just like, I'm in the mood to be scared right now. Ooh, they got everything I could possibly want to be scared by. Now, around the office, we all have our favorites on the platform, including Train to Busan, Mandy. We got Team The Wailing. We got Team Classic Poltergeist. I mean, that's me, right? They're here. I love it. I'll watch it every year. We actually watched Poltergeist on a New Rock Stars retreat last October. We got to do another one of those retreats, MT. We're going to drag you somewhere into a cabin and in the middle of the Southern California desert and make you watch a scary movie.
You're going to make me scared. Ah, I don't know if I can handle it, but I'm ready.
Oh, you're ready. They have a great collection of exclusive and original programming. Our editor, Drew, is a huge fan of the Joe Bob Briggs Last Drive-In series. They got a new special airing this week. Get started streaming the best horror, thriller, and supernatural content. Shudder's expertly curated collection includes must-see titles like Vicious Fun, The Mortuary Collection, and PG Psycho Goreman, plus all the best horror documentaries in the hit Creepshow TV series from executive producer Greg Nicotero of The Walking Dead. So to try Shudder for free for 30 days, go to Shudder.com and use the promo code ROGUE. That's SHUDDER.com, promo code ROGUE. And guys, there's nothing sexier than confidence, and Blue Chew can help give you the confidence where it counts. On your dick.
The penis, yes.
The penis level. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive a prescription within days. And the best part, it's all done online. So no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy. BlueChew's tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped direct to your door in a discreet package. So if you could benefit from some extra confidence when it's time to perform, Blue Chew can help you. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code InsideMarvel at checkout. Just pay the $5 in shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code InsideMarvel to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring this episode. All right, MT, back to this finale discussion. What if Skinny Steve is still alive in that Hydra Stomper in the post-credit scene? What do you think they could set up for season two?
I love how the season ended like this, because I was like, what if it's like the corpse of Skinny Steve just in this armor?
Skeleton. Beetle coming out of his eye hole.
He's like, I got a gift for you, bestie. It's your ex-boyfriend, kind
There's
of.
There's someone inside.
She's all
tattered
excited.
She's like, skin yay! Stretched across bones.
Now you can bury him yourself. I was like, oh, thank you, Black Widow.
And then Captain Britain is like, why did you think I would want this? And then like, Black why? Widow's like, that's how I grieve with my dead loved ones. Look, here's my mama. Here's my papa. I found right? them in an unmarked grave at a chain link fence in Russia. They still love me. Thanks, Daddy Ivan.
This is how everyone reunites with their loved ones, no? Is this not...
That would be the episode of What If I want to see.
Right. But, like, no, I find it really, like, interesting about the fact that Skinny Steve could still be alive in this universe somehow. And, like, it's probably going to have to do with, like, the whole Winter Soldier parallels. Like, maybe he got frozen somehow. Or, like, maybe, like, he was trying to get Peggy back, and so he was working together with Howard Stark to, like, go through portals and, like, try to, you know, find Peggy. So, like, maybe this is just a Steve that just finally found his way back to the proper timeline where his boo thing is.
I like the idea. You brought up the Winter Soldier thing. Maybe we're going to see Winter Soldier Steve Rogers. And that, like, the Hydra Stomper was taken by Hydra. And that was used as his, like, cryo cell to kind of rejuvenate him every time to send him back out on deployment. Now, he would still be Skinny Steve. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he was, like, he was basically immortalized in some way with some kind of de-aging serum, but he has to stay in this winter, this Hydra Stomper armor as kind of an iron lung. Like, there was who was Tony Stark's brother in the comics who had to be, like, in an iron lung? That was, like, Howard and Maria's first kid. Arno Stark?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, maybe that's kind of the direction they go with Skinny Steve, is he's just basically, he's super powerful because he's always in this armor, but he can never leave it. And he's this tragic figure. I mean, it would make it kind of dark for Blackwood to be like, there's someone inside. Be like, it's going to be really freaking dark for you guys.
Right.
I didn't read the product label when I cracked open this crate.
What's really weird is that Black Widow was trying to set up Peggy at the beginning of this episode, which she knew. Right.
Bernard in accounting.
Like, she knew that she had this special gift for Peggy. Like, why are you doing that? Why are you trying to set her up when you?
Well,
when you're
maybe
booting?
Behind that armor, Bernard in accounting comes out with some powers. Like, hello, would you like to look at some spreadsheets, Captain Carter?
It's all just one big elaborate ploy between Black Widow and Bernard to
Peggy
finally get
got
Peggy
the dud. It's a Simpsons bit. She got the dud. Slow smile.
That'd be so funny if she was just trying to set up Peggy. That'd be so funny. Sorry, I know that's like, I don't know why I'm crying.
Bernard, what were you doing in this crate the whole time? Oh, just playing the solo version of Wingspan. Another plug for the greatest board game of all time, Wingspan.
Oh my god, I'm literally crying. I don't know why I thought that was such a funny scenario.
Well, let's talk about Zola. MT, what if Zolatron, that's what I'm calling him, and Killmonger Infinity ever escaped from Strange's supreme pocket reality? It seemed like that was the implication. If he ever takes his eye off the ball at one point, these two are going to crack out of that egg and then go fart everywhere. So what do you think is going to happen if these two ever escape? Do you think they'll ever escape?
Oh yeah, they're definitely going to escape. Like, they're not just going to stay in that prison forever. And I think that how they escape is that they're probably going to work together, because Zola and Killmonger are very two conniving people. And so they're probably going to be like, you know what, why are we even fighting? You know, you seem like a a very smart brown man, we could team together and take over the multiverse. And Killmonger's gonna be like, what do you mean by brown man? And then they're not gonna work together.
Yeah, because they realize he'll take immediate offense to that.
It's like, what do you mean, brown? Oh yeah, you're from the 1950s.
Can I get a different partner? Anyone want to trade with me? This racist Swiss is trying to team up with me, and I don't want to do it.
But no, seriously. Zola and Killmonger are probably going to end up like striking a truce and then working together to burst their way out of the bubble. And then Strange Supreme's going to be like, oh, we have a problem. They're back and they're working together, and the multiverse is in trouble. And so they're going to have to make a bigger Guardians of the Multiverse team. So that's what I think. But what do you think?
MT, remember during Falcon Winter Soldier episode 1, there was that Swiss bank, and we're like, that's where Zola keeps his soul. We got so excited just based off of a Swiss bank. There is a forgotten past. No, I think so. I think it's a matter of time. I think what we'll see is every season, they'll probably add a new multiversal threat to this pocket reality to just be trapped in this like Voldemort, Harry, wand connection moment. And just keep adding people to it until it becomes a Pandora's box and they all get out. Like, that's going to be their version of Ravencroft or Arkham. You know, you just keep throwing people in there and eventually they all get out. I think that's
like, what if in that scenario, like, what if the Watcher does that and he shoves a bunch of people in this prison and then Strange is like, oh yeah, it's totally fine, I'll just watch this. And then he just goes, hum, nom, 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 nom. Because he loves it. To eat all these,
that
like,
guy loves
dimensional
to gobble
beings.
Up stuff. That was and insane.
So, it's just so, I feel like he would do that. I feel like he would just totally eat those prisoners and be like, oh, you guys seem like a delicious power meal. Because, you know, Strange Supreme is technically still a villain. Like, I do not trust that man at all.
Yeah.
Even though
he
was on the side of good, he's very much a greedy magician. So,
well, he had the squid monster come out of his hand, and then they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. What just happened?
What was that?
I'm good. I'm totally fine. And then he used it to, you know, fight giant Infinity Ultron. But like, I want to see more come out of it that's not good, you know?
Yeah.
I want to see more consequences. Well, before we continue, our friends at Audible would like to remind you to listen to The Sandman Act 2 on Audible right now. The next part to the number one New York Times bestseller, The Sandman, is available for your listening pleasure. Enter the dreaming again and journey into the world of myths, imagination, and terror based on the DC graphic novels written by the great Neil Gaiman. The epic voice cast is led by James McAvoy as Morpheus, Lord of Dreams, and includes Brian Cox and Kat Dimmings, John Lithgow, Jeffrey Wright, and so many more. The blockbuster audio adaptation is the greatest epic in the history of comic books, continues, and it expands into the French Revolution and ancient Rome, 19th century San Francisco, 8th century Baghdad, and beyond. It's never only a dream. So go to audible.com/dreaming and listen now. So MT, we got to talk about the Watcher this episode. What if the Watcher actually planned everything, as he seems to have? Why didn't he recruit heavier hitters? And what consequences will he have to face to the other Watchers?
Oh man, that's a really good question because, like, you know, he recruited these specific people when he definitely could have recruited, like, a Captain Marvel or something, like, or maybe even, like, there's like a multiverse full of destroyer armors. I don't know why he just didn't go for that. But anyway, yeah. So I think that he very much had the specific vision in mind ever since, you know, he was watching a Nat and Clint, you know, pick up like those files in that little KGB area. He was like, you know what? Like, this is the specific path. I need these specific players. Yeah. So I think he knew exactly what he needed to do because he's a very efficient person. He has a big brain. You got to remember that. And I feel like having heavier hitters would probably attract Ultron. Because, like, if you had, like, you know, like a surging power source that is, like, Captain Marvel on this planet, I feel like Ultron would have been like, what's going on here? A lot faster than he did. Because he did end up fighting them.
Yeah, I think specifically they needed... I don't think he planned his team before Ultron Infinity arrived. I think clearly he was caught off guard by that. And then that plan formed with him and Doctor Strange at the end of episode 8. I think that's when he started playing everything out, including who he would invite and why he needed this specific team. I think he needed people, like a mix of people who could be just, you know, directed chaos the way Party Thor is. He needed some more tactical sticky finger snatchers like T'Challa. And I think he needed someone who could rival Ultron Infinity. He needed like Zola to detach the mind from him, but it needed to happen at the same time that Killmonger would be right there and could just be just as power hungry as Ultron is. And the two of them could just kind of neutralize each other in this pocket reality. So I'm going to have to spend some more time thinking about each step of the plan. But I think the end goal was he needed Killmonger's selfishness, right? And he needed Zola to be part of it. What's still kind of hard for me to imagine right now is why didn't he just bring Natasha there sooner to plug in that thing? Because it seems like there was just a lot of steps. Like, Ultron got back the Soul Stone at that point. My only thinking is, like, there needed to be a first wave so that Ultron felt confident in this moment and started to glow bright, so that someone specifically on their home turf, in this case Wanda Maximoff, could get the jump on him and then plug it in there. That's the only thinking I would have there. But, like, clearly the failure of the Infinity Crusher was part of that plan. Like, they needed to basically have Ultron feel like he won the first round so that he felt like this is the best you got. And then someone could sneak up behind and get him. But it does sound like a lot of steps. I'll agree. 5D chess.
I feel like a lot of the times with the Infinity Stones in various, you know, universes, whether it's the comics or animated, it's the hubris of the wielder that ends up being the downfall of the Infinity Stone wielder.
Exactly. Pride goeth before the fall. let's end on this question about the Infinity Stones. Let's just take a step back and react to the way What If used the Infinity Stones throughout the episodes. And then in this final episode, there's this little moment where Gamora goes, oh, right. Infinity Stones only are unique to their own home reality. So the Infinity Stone Crusher won't work against Ultron's Infinity Stones because it's from my past reality, not this one. Cool. I wish you were saying that the whole time. But then, like, there was a moment where Doctor Strange uses the Time Stone, his Time Stone, against Ultron, who has his own Time Stone. So clearly they're saying that, like, stones can coexist in the same reality and both have power. Yet they never unwind anything the way that the reality or the way that the Time Stone is supposed to. I think that was their line. Like, they can be big energy blasts, but the specific uses of the stones outside of their home realities, we're just not going to cross that line because we don't want to create too many questions. But, like, I'm thinking, why not, you know, if you're going to decide they don't matter, why not just say, like, I'm going to unwind you. No, I'm going to unwind you. And then at some point, they just kind of unwind each other. And then the two time stones, they're just kind of locked like two Rubik's cubes trying to solve each other. You know, they're just floating off on the side, fighting each other, like, you know, just their own side battle. There's all kinds of crazy things you can do to follow that narrative thread. But you got to ask the question.
I think the Infinity Stones in this episode are variants of each other. And, like, Ultron's Infinity Stones are variants of Doctor Strange's Infinity Stone, his Time Stone. And so the reason why Gamora's Infinity Crusher didn't work against Ultron's stones is because probably, like, on a molecular level, they're just different. And, like, it takes different amounts of force to take them down. And so, like, maybe, like, we see this in the battle between Wanda and Ultron briefly in this episode. Like, Wanda was supposed to have the ability to destroy the stones in our universe.
That's
right. Because this was a Wanda from a different universe than Ultron, maybe, like, on a molecular level, things are different. And so, like, well, you can't destroy them, but, like, you can use Infinity Stones in any universe that you want, but, like, the process of destroying them is going to be different because it's a different, even though the two time stones could look the same, they're different on the inside.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that is the show's rule. I just think it's a flawed piece of logic to suggest that you can use them in alternate universes without blinking an eye, but you cannot destroy them. You know, it's like they can either exist or they can't exist. And I think that's the kind of line the show has walked in saying it doesn't matter. But every time you say, like, it doesn't matter, like, nothing has been more debated in the Marvel Cinematic Universe than, like, what exactly the Infinity Stones are. The first era of the movies was called the Infinity Saga. These are the core things. And these Marvel filmmakers and Kevin Feige they worked so hard to make them so specific. Like, the entire movie of Avengers Endgame is built around this logic of when stones can be brought back and how they have to be destroyed, how they have to be returned to maintain the sacred timeline. Loki was even very specific about, you know, them not mattering for this show, at least in the boundaries of the TVA. But then to go back in different realities and say, like, no, none of those rules apply. It's like, you don't have to bring up the Infinity Stones at all in What If, you know? There's plenty of stories you could tell that don't at all bring in the Infinity Stones.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Like,
you don't have to bring them on screen.
It is very interesting that they decided to make the Infinity Stones the focus of this season when Marvel Studios is very much moving past the Infinity Saga.
Right.
But then again, this is What If, and it does go throughout the timeline of our... It very much relies on the past 10, 11 years of the MCU.
Clearly, the producers of What If said that the only way to make Ultron a Nexus being is by giving him all 6 Infinity Stones, but there's plenty of other ways he could have been
so many different ways
than just giving him the 6 Infinity Stones. If anything, that's like a new rule you're establishing, that Infinity Stones make you a Nexus being if you have all 6 of them. I buy it. I bought it in past episodes. I just get a little confused when Gamora just says, oh, the Infinity Stone Crusher doesn't work now. Like,
oh, man.
Now you decide this logic matters? It just feels a little cheap. And overall, I still really love the series. I just wish they didn't hold themselves down with these little moments, you know? Like, just go crazy with it. The way in episode 4, like with Doctor Strange, like, yeah, the Time Stone was being used for all kinds of crazy stuff, but they didn't they had absolute points, right? I guess that was their one restriction, but it had narrative weight to it. Like, we saw the heartbreak of what an absolute point did, and we saw the consequences of breaking an absolute point. Here, it was just kind of brought up as, like, we're in the middle of Inception and inventing new rules just to create obstacles for ourselves.
No, I definitely agree with you there. And, like, hopefully in season 2, like, the logic will be a little bit more ironed out.
I think they could just decide either the logic does matter or it doesn't matter, right? But you just have to stay true to the logic within your own series. The way Loki seemed to be at odds with the logic of some of other MCU titles, like Avengers Infinity War, but it stayed true mostly to its own logic throughout those 6 episodes. That's all we really need. And then afterwards, as we go on to a new title, we can figure out what pieces of that logic matter to this world. But when the logic changes mid-play like that, it can feel a little like whiplashy. But overall, I'm super appreciative of this series. I think it was really fun. I thought it created interesting character combinations. The Guardians of the Multiverse, I think, is one of the more exciting teams to watch. Like, I agree with you. It did feel like the Avengers versus Thanos on Titan, but just even more of that. And we got to see more moves. I thought it was super fun to watch.
Especially that Mjolnir multiplying move. I love that so much. I had to replay it. I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. I love it.
And it'll give us endless stuff to talk about as we look ahead to future Marvel titles, Multiverse of Madness, Doctor Strange's next battle, and then, of course, Spider-Man No Way Home and Hawkeye and all these great things we're excited for. And we will be here for all of it. Inside Marvel isn't going anywhere. We will still be here every single week talking about the biggest Marvel news, unwinding and unpacking stuff that we're still confused about from What If. But that's it for this episode. So we want to thank all of you for watching. And MT, thank you to you. Another great series that was just made even better.
Another one in the books, bro. Yeah. I love watching Marvel series with you, bro. Me too. Would not want it any other way.
Me too. Don't forget to check out our merch options at newrockstarsmerch.com. Follow me at EA Voss. Follow Mastertainment Mastertainment. Follow New Rockstars. Subscribe to Inside Marvel wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for watching, and we will close with our favorite moment of the episode.
Las Vegas!
Can't say I've heard that battle cry before.